99.3 County FM is your voice, connecting the county. Seniors and technology, embracing the digital world, is our effort to help people of all ages understand current and upcoming technologies. Learn how to capitalize on tech for you and your family. The following is a County FM exclusive original documentary funded by the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program.
Welcome to episode 4 of 99.3 County FM series on seniors and technology, embracing the digital world. In our last episode, we explored accessibility and what it means for seniors in today's digital world. Today's episode focuses on technology's role in our medical care, specifically medical technology, healthcare tech trends, and devices that can help seniors stay safe and more independent as they age in place. As our population ages, more seniors are choosing to stay in their homes rather than move into assisted living facilities. Technology plays a vital role in supporting these choices by providing innovative solutions that enhance safety, comfort, and independence. From smart home systems to monitors that can detect falls, to sensors that can notify if a burner is left on, to devices that ease the confusion of early stage dementia, and health monitoring apps that share vital details with doctors and caregivers, modern technology has the power to improve quality of life, reduce emergency room visits, and provide peace of mind for loved ones near and far. So, what exactly do we mean by aging in place? Simply put, it's a decision made to stay in one's home independently as long as possible. But to make this decision viable, especially when there are health, cognitive, or mobility limiting conditions, adaptive equipment and technology become pivotal to autonomy. Beyond physical modifications like grab bars, ramps, stair lifts, and other universal design features, smart home features, wearables, and remote monitoring make it possible to stay in familiar surroundings comfortably. Studies show that seniors who choose to age in place experience better health outcomes, improved well-being, a reduced risk of illness and infection, and not least of all, happiness. Given the choice of moving to a facility or staying put in a home built of fond memories, what would you choose? Dr. Bruce Wallace is the Executive Director of AgeWell SAM3 National Innovation Hub at Carleton University in Ottawa. SAM3 stands for Sensors and Analytics for Monitoring Mobility and Memory. His focus is on research and innovation projects that apply technology-based solutions to help an aging population maintain a healthy, independent lifestyle. Dr. Wallace spoke to us about emerging tech devices available to seniors right now and who they would be appropriate for. One of the points he stressed initially is that the technology must be tailored to the individual. For example, we all know about wearables, Fitbit, Apple Watches, even our smartphones have a fall detection feature. But maybe that's not enough. After all, you need to have your phone or the device on your person for it to work, and that doesn't always happen. But what if you had a tool that could recognize when risk increases or when more strategic interventions were needed?
And I think the interesting technologies are coming out is not fall detection systems per se. And the reason I say that is once you've fallen, it's too late. But there's a lot of systems that are coming out that are looking at and identifying changes in mobility as you're aging, which can be indicative of, you know, it's noting you're walking a lot slower, right? That can be a precursor to, yeah, you're getting increased fall risk. Maybe it's time to do some interventions. People who have walking aids that don't use them, I've actually seen systems that would detect and kind of remind you, gee, you're supposed to be using that walking aid. So those are the kinds of things that are coming out.
And how do these devices connect with others? Who do they connect to? Typically, this is something you control, but if they connect to the internet or use artificial intelligence, are they safe? Are they private?
If the technology is going into my house, it's my data, it's me, it's monitoring, I need to be in control and ownership of whomever it gets shared with. So that's a starting point. If I start and look at, you know, where can that data and knowledge be shared? First and foremost, the family caregivers, you know, the family itself can be a place the information is shared. You know, the two most classics that would be shared with would be the spouse in cases where you have a partnership. And in many, many cases, it's the adult child. So it's, you know, the information about mom or dad being shared to an adult child who is maybe living across town, maybe living in another city, but wanting to make sure their parent is safe and and healthy and continuing to move around. So that's the first place it typically gets shared. One of the places I think it should get shared, and I notice I said that in future tense because it's not being shared there. I know of some companies that are seriously exploring this, would be the in-home care team. So for a person who has home care, in-home PSW, in-home nursing, etc., that's coming to their house, that's a team who could make great use of knowledge, etc., from the system. You know, reality is, if you could, you know, a PSW, it's not uncommon for somebody to have PSW services, you know, 6 hours a week, you know, 3 days a week for 2 hours. The knowledge that PSW has about you is the knowledge they get while they're there. And hopefully, if it's the same PSW over time, they build some knowledge and connection with you and know, can actually see the day-to-day, week-to-week changes that may happen. If it's a different PSW every time, that's not going to happen. The challenge that those companies, that like that service provider, the PSW's got, is the knowledge of what's going on in between, right? You know, does the PSW know you've been eating 3 meals a day and eating well? You know, the only data point they get when they walk in is maybe the, you know, the measurement of if the dirty dishes and, you know, peek in the fridge to know if there's food been eaten. It's evidence-based versus necessarily fact-based knowledge, right? So, you know, are you sleeping well? Are you sleeping on a regular pattern? Like all kinds of interesting questions that could come up. And there are a number of home care agencies that are starting to look at where can technology fit into the puzzle, you know, and it can start to get into the mode of, you know, when home care agencies, you know, start their day, they can actually have a window of knowing out of our clients. You know, I tend to think of it as a traffic light, red, yellow, green. Here's my clients where the data from the home is indicating something's really awry. So maybe they go first on the visit list today. Maybe they actually get a phone call and then, you know, progressing down versus just blindly going everybody in the same order every day and finding out when you get to somebody at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you really should have been there at 8 a.m. Right. So it can help them, one, in efficiency of how they do care, because we're always short of PSWs, but it can also help them prioritize, you know, who is getting care. And now the PSW, when they come through the door, is walking through the door going, we haven't seen any motion in the kitchen for 2 days. So they're walking through the door knowing nutrition, malnutrition, and all of those types of things are immediately top of mind. Inquire, dig a little bit when you're talking. And if you need to escalate for, you know, nursing or whatever intervention, you can. If I extrapolate to the next level of like data going to the physicians, you know, having the data from your house going to your general, your GP, I think that's a long way off.
Remote patient monitoring does exist, and in some cases, alerts are shared with a care team. Conditions like diabetes, heart disease, COPD, and other chronic conditions can be monitored in real time. But typically, these interventions are prescribed by doctors in an effort to keep patients out of the hospital. So while this type of technology does exist, that's not our focus for today. Let's go back to the privacy question. Installing cameras might seem like the simplest way to track movement in the home, but that seems just a little invasive, doesn't it? Dr. Wallace tells us how Senior Tech is addressing that concern.
Ultimately, the best way of doing motion analysis is by looking at video. And as soon as I say video, I introduce the concept of privacy, right? Where I'm putting cameras. I cannot stand cameras from that standpoint. There's a company, AltumView, out of BC, that has got a really innovative product where they've used AI technology in a really good way because the AI is in the camera. So yes, it's a video camera. I would describe it much more as a very intelligent motion sensor because it captures video in the camera. It looks at every video frame and identifies, is there a human form? And if there is, it exports only, no video, just the coordinates of an 18 coordinate stick figure. Here's the heads, here's the hands, here's the elbows, here's the knees. And you can redraw and animate the stick figure moving around, but that's literally what it is. It's a stick figure moving around the house. And that can now get used in a very privacy respecting way to do motion analysis, activity analysis, walking speed. Yes, it can do falls, right? And you can, you know, sprinkle a few of them around the house and cover it nice and safely. If I pick another, I'll pick another BC company. Sleep and bed related things are really important. You can end up in people with dementia getting day-night reversals. So you end up with literally sleep pattern issues, poor sleep, restless sleep, throw in urinary tract infections, you know, frequent need to get up to go to the bathroom. There's a company out of BC, TalkTech, that makes an underfoot bed sensor. So you just put it under the leg of the bed, and it can tell you when people got into bed, when they got out of bed, restlessness, so poor sleep, which may be pain, frequent bed exits, and it can, I haven't medically validated it, but it can do heart rate and respiration rate. So it gives you that, in, you know, vital signs, because there's a lot of weird, really good knowledge about somebody that come out of sleep. Because if you're not sleeping well, everything else is going to go awry.
The next tech device Dr. Wallace tells us about would probably be useful for anybody, not just seniors. We've all been distracted and left a burner on, right?
There's a Kingston company called CTS, Cooktop Safety, that is just introducing a really innovative product with a thermal camera that literally is pointing at the top of the stove, okay? And just from a kitchen safety perspective, it's got the ability to sever the power to the stove if the top of the stove gets to the type of temperatures where a deep fat fire, deep fat oils, if you're doing French fries in that old way, will flash burn somewhere north of 300 degrees Celsius, depending on the fat. This will, if it sees a temperature approaching that, will literally pull the plug to the stove before it happens, right? So it's an outright fire safe device before the fire happened, which is so much better than a fire extinguisher because that's too late. But the other thing they can do is just basic activity patterns. Is this, you know, identifying data, right? Is the stove being used? So nutrition type question. Is the stove being used safely? So the example being, you are cooking on the top of the stove. Let's say you're searing a steak and the top of the stove is really hot. Are you close to the stove often enough for the stove to be at that temperature, right? So we're not worried about a fire, but we're worried about just, are you paying attention? Or worse yet, did you forget about it, right?
Besides home safety and health monitoring devices seniors can use in their homes, access to digital health records can be incredibly helpful for seniors and their caregivers. Dr. Rashad Bayat is the senior clinical editor at InfoWay, an organization that works with governments, healthcare organizations, clinicians, and patients to facilitate faster, more secure digital information sharing. We asked Dr. Bayat to weigh in on digital health and the increasing use of AI in general practice. So what is digital health?
So, you know, if you use a formal definition, digital health is the use of information technology and electronic communication tools to deliver healthcare services and facilitate better health. So that's a definition that comes from the Medical Council of Canada is using at the moment for one of their competencies. But in really simple terms, digital health is just the use of digital or electronic tools or technologies to support you in accessing, receiving, and to support providers in delivering healthcare.
If our medical records are digitized, who has access? And should we be concerned about privacy?
So typically, you know, the people who would see your digital health information are those who would be in your immediate circle of care, we would call it. So, for example, if you happen to be admitted, hopefully not, to the hospital, that might include your nursing and physician team members, but it could also include more team members or less, depending on what you're there for. Also, there's a concept of role-based access to your records, and that's determined by the institution or organization where you're receiving your care. So some members of the team might only be able to access certain aspects of your records, whereas others may be able to access more of your record because it's needed to provide care for you based on the role that they have. I can expand on that a little bit if you want. Like, a common place where people access care is, of course, in the community. And so, you know, in your local community clinic, the people accessing your record might be your family physician, a specialist physician, a registered nurse, a nurse practitioner.
With so many eyes on our medical data, should we be concerned about privacy?
Health data privacy and security is built into the clinical information systems in use in Ontario and across the country. And this could include features like multi-factor authentication for logins, screen timeouts, screen locks. But ultimately, the features do help the electronic health record systems adhere to provincial, territorial, and national privacy laws.
In our conversation, Dr. Byatt had a few tips for seniors to keep their digital health records and their privacy intact. Keeping in mind that healthcare data is protected under stringent privacy laws, there are still situations where your data can be exposed. The onus is on us to take precautions to ensure that doesn't happen, such as when we're engaged in a video call with our doctors or caregivers.
A lot of the same practices that one would consider for as privacy and security hygiene for digital health technologies are also the same that apply to general technologies and how you might navigate technology in other aspects of your life, whether it's banking or signing into your online streaming accounts and so on. So simple habits such as strong passwords, you know, that's number one. Be very cautious when you're logging in on shared or public devices. So make sure your devices are also password protected and have a level of security to them, whether that's, you know, an iPad or a desktop or a laptop or whatever it might be. Also be careful on shared or public Wi-Fi. If you're involved in a virtual consultation, which has become more common since the pandemic, like a video visit or a telephone consultation, make sure you're in a quiet, private place when you take the call. And all of these little tips can go a long way in helping seniors and others in general using digital health tools confidently and safely.
And how about those AI transcription services some doctors are using? How do they support better care? And should we worry?
Seniors, Canadians will generally be seeing more AI-powered tools in the healthcare system over the next few years. And most of them are in what we call very low-risk kind of scenarios. So an AI scribe is a tool, very simply, that listens to a conversation between a clinician and a patient and helps the clinician document, transcribe, and summarize the clinical notes during or after the visit. And really what it does is allow the doctor or the nurse to spend more time talking and engaging and examining the patient if needed, and less time typing and navigating through their computer. They're really designed to support clinical people, not replace clinical judgment at all. An interesting side of AI scribe tools is that they're also having an interesting impact upon the patient experience. So patients are finding that doctors and nurses tend to be more present when they are actually engaging using this tool. The other thing to mention with regard to the scribes is that there is a lot of scribe tools actually have a feature that I would say doctors are starting to test out, some nurses and nurse practitioners, some ER environments are testing out as well, which is they call it a summary of your encounter that's very patient friendly. So the scribe is able to help generate a summary of what the most important points that were talked about during the session or that were agreed upon between the doctor and the patient. And the patient can actually have a copy of that in some circumstances. So these are very, very early days in this technology. But, you know, again, it's something that could be changing the way patients engage with the healthcare system over time.
Dr. Byatt reminds us that if you don't feel comfortable with your doctor's use of the AI scribe, you have the right to refuse. Your consent must be obtained before the device is turned on. So keep in mind, you're always in the driver's seat. Whatever you decide, it's your call and you're right.
Your physician or your nurse practitioner, whoever's using it, needs to ask your consent to use it. And that's sort of part of the instruction around these new tools, some of the regulatory recommendations around them. There are certain protocols that should be followed. And so, you know, if you feel uncomfortable with using something like that, don't hesitate to say, listen, you know, I'd rather not at this time.
Is there any other new initiatives that we should tell people about or that you'd like to share?
Actually, there's a really, really neat one. So I'm not sure, folks may not know too much about Canada Health InfoWeb, but so we're a not-for-profit organization focusing on the advancement of digital health technologies across the country. But one of the areas that we focus on is digital health standards. So standards, again, coming back to that piece about getting systems to talk to each other using the same language, there are now in 2026 more national standards that are agreed upon in this space. And one of them is something called the patient summary. So this is the idea that you could have a snapshot, your medical history as a patient or a person, and you could have that provided to you in almost real time. And so it's based on, there is a national standard, but provinces and territories are adopting that national standard in their own way. And New Brunswick has been quite ahead of the game in terms of what they've done with this. So they have a patient portal called MyHealthNB. And within that patient portal, if you sign in as a person, a citizen of New Brunswick, you can generate a snapshot in time of your medical history in a nice brief summary that you could actually then share with people that you would like it to be shared with using a QR code, so in a secure electronic manner, and it's time limited. But it's something that I think, that's sort of one interesting example of a way that a digital health technology is having an immediate impact upon Canadians. You know, now this has helped people when they're, let's say they show up at an appointment and they'd like to have a list of their medications handy, you can just bring that up right there. Or if you happen to be traveling to another province, God forbid you end up in the emergency room for some reason, you can pull up a list of your medications through this patient summary. So that's an interesting example in one province that showcases a new initiative within digital health in Canada. And I think we'll see more of that over time in that particular domain.
The landscape of healthcare and medical technology is evolving rapidly, but it's clear that new tech, whether used for remote monitoring in the home or to help doctors and caregivers provide better quality and continuity of care, can make lives better, safer, and more comfortable for seniors. Join us next time as we take a closer look at non-health related tech devices and how they can help seniors enhance everyday living. We'd like to thank our subject experts, Dr. Bruce Wallace, Executive Director, AgeWell SAM3, and affiliated investigator for Briere Health Research Institute, Dr. Rashad Bayat, InfoWay's Clinical Senior Leader. Script writing by Astrid Young, research by Tasha Shaw-Verbeck, interviews by Craig Mills, music by John Sharkey, production by David Wheatley and assisted by Gage Broderick, administration Jillian Carson, grant writing Lorraine Wilson, research direction Bob Cook, narration by me, Wendy Mesley, project coordination Craig Mills.
99.3 County FM, your nonprofit community volunteer-driven radio station, is proud to provide a platform for the voices of our community. Thank you to our partners who helped create our documentary, Seniors and Technology, Embracing the Digital World, the Prince Edward Learning Center, the County of Prince Edward Public Library, and the Prince Edward County Community Care for Seniors Association, with funding from the Government of Canada's New Horizons for Seniors program.